When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome into Poke the Bear, episode 221, presented by Prize Picks. That is Connor Ryan. I am Evan Marinofsky. Connor, what is up?
Evan, I'm doing well. How you doing?
Doing great. I'm excited. I am excited. Finally, the regular season is over. It's over. It's over. It's done. Or at least for the Bruins, there's some teams that still have games left now. And it seems like it felt like Tuesday night was the last night of the regular season.
Got 2 days to go.
Yeah, there's still 2 days left. There's some games. It don't mean anything.
Actually, Evan, it means quite a bit. Auston Matthews going for his 70th goal today.
Ooh, so. This is true. Forgot about that one. All right. So yeah, goal number 70. But it's official. The Bruins will play the Toronto Maple Leafs in round one. You know what's funny, Connor? People are going to think this is dumb or smart. But when the Bruins are about to get in a playoff series with anybody, I try to do like a season mode with the team they're going to play, because you get to know the players and, line combinations and D pairings, and it gets in your head, because you know the Bruins lines like the back of your hand. But other teams, you know the big players and you know kind of the lines, but you don't know everything about the fourth liner. So it kind of gives you something on those guys. I've been doing that with the Tampa Bay Lightning for the last 3 weeks. Not the Maple Leafs. So I don't know a thing about the Maple Leafs, Connor. I got nothing. They're at north of the border. Is that where Toronto is?
I believe so. I'm not sure.
I think that's where it is. Yeah.
I'll have to do another Sporkle quiz, see if I can figure out where it is on a map.
But. No better procrastination tool than the Sporkle quizzes. I want to welcome the Maple Leafs fans who are going to be joining these podcasts and the post-game live streams. I know they'll be lighting it up in the comments section. So I'm gonna be warm to you, even though you might be cold to me. I'm a welcoming man. So that's
good to have him back. Right, yeah. Evan?
I missed them. It's been 5 years.
It'll be a fun series. It's gonna be a fun time. We complain, but it's going to be a great series.
Bruins Leafs is the best for content in terms of just, you know, there's a rivalry there. I know the Bruins have faced the Lightning. Yeah, they lasted it in 2020. That was the bubble. Prior to that, it was 2018. And then prior to that, I think it was 2011. There's more juice with the Leafs. There's more juice with the Leafs. So I am a fan of this. I will say one thing, though. For a long time, almost everyone's been in agreement. Oh, wanted Toronto over Tampa. But this rendition of the Leafs is tougher than in past years. They can score a lot, especially 5-on-5. They have some lethal, lethal scorers who can make you pay. We'll get into some of the deficiencies in a bit, but this is not the same Toronto. You know, this isn't the young Matthews and Marner who you can kind of walk all over in the postseason. This team has been at it for some time. And at some point, they're going to break through, I think. They are the Leafs. Mm-hmm. But I do think at some point they're going to break through. And I think people should kind of be careful what they wished for with getting this Leafs the series in the first round.
Yeah, regardless of who the Bruins were going to draw, whether it's Tampa or Toronto, it was going to be a tough matchup. I've seen a lot of, I think, celebration. It's like the end of Return of the Jedi. Everyone's already partying, like with the Ewoks, thinking this is going to be a walk in the park. It's like, and again, like, listen, and we'll dive into it on this episode. Like, yeah, there's clear flaws with this team, a lot that I think Bruins fans are probably familiar with, but there's still a Toronto team that's playing at a high level right now, scoring a bunch of goals, a lot of goals at 5-on-5 play, which is usually a pretty good indicator of a team that can carry that into the postseason. And as you said, like, this isn't the same, like, inexperienced team that, like, seems like, almost like the Bruins were last year, where they get punched in the face and couldn't really recover from it, right? Or couldn't get out of their own way. This is a team that's been around for a while now. We mentioned it on Bruins Beat, but, you know, Bruins fans are terrified of the Tampa Bay Lightning as this huge juggernaut team that knows how to win. The Maple Leafs took care of them last year in the playoffs too. Like they know how to win. And as much as you look at like the flaws of Toronto, right, with like their defense and goaltending, Tampa has a pretty damn good top six, a lot of effective weapons out there. Didn't do much good against this same kind of defense and same goalie group in Toronto. And again, you look on the other side of the ice, Toronto is a very, very deadly team. Like you look at the Bruins and how they play. Yes, like going up against a team that is so reliant on their offense seems to fall into the Bruins' favor when ideally you look at the Bruins and where their strengths are, lies in their goaltending and their defense. But Toronto's dangerous though. Like they're, I think, the sixth best 5-on-5 goal differential in the NHL this year. Not really like a primarily like a rush team. Like they're actually generating a lot of chances at like in the slot in grade A ice. The one issue for the Bruins this year, I think they're 16 out of 16 playoff teams in high danger chances allowed per 60 minutes. Like,
yeah, they have again, not been the same defensive juggernaut they've been in the past.
And they've had to rely on either a goaltending bailing them out, or they've had just good fortune on their side. You know, not every high danger chance obviously leads to a goal, but the Bruins have kind of played with fire in that regard this year. And you got a Toronto team that's got the usual suspects in Matthews and Marner and Nylander and Tavares and Tyler Bertuzzi, who's caught on fire here down the stretch. Like, they're a team that has the finishing ability if they're able to generate those slot chances. So the Bruins really need to shore that area of their game up, and they're going to need their two goalies to stand tall. Because again, the Bruins, if they play to their game, like, you know, they should be able to beat this team as tough as they might be, and how high powered offensively they are. But if the defense falters or the goalies take a step back, you're in for a pretty tough sledding in this series.
I mentioned it at the end of Bruins beat on Tuesday when we were talking about things that worry us with the Bruins. And I think one of those areas is you don't have Patrice Bergeron anymore. And I don't mean in terms of point production. I mean of, you know, defensive abilities and, you know, being the guy that can shut down any line. The Patrice Bergeron effect is no longer there. And so, you know, again, going up against a guy like Austin Matthews, I was seeing that when the Leafs played the Panthers recently, and you know, they keep Matthews away from Alexander Barkov when they're in Toronto, because obviously Barkov can shut anybody down. And Bergeron has that same kind of effect of just going out there and shut, you know, he was always able to just shut down pretty much any line he wanted to. You don't have that anymore. And that's one little area that continues to worry me is what line for the Bruins is going to step up in Boston and be tasked with shutting down the Matthews line. It'll probably be Coyle and Marchand. If I had to guess, I have to go back and look at the games in Boston for the Bruins against the Leafs this year of who got, you know, the Matthews line the most. And the other thing you have to consider with Toronto is they've had their scoring spread out in terms of, I mean, Nylander has been down on the third line for a bit with Pontus Holmberg. And you know, you've had Domi potentially on the top line with Bertuzzi and Matthews and Marner with Tavares and this and that. And that's hard because now you've got all these scorers in different places. I know Nylander hasn't scored in like 9 straight games. He's been sitting on 40 goals since like the end of March, and he's like 3 points away from 100. And it sounds like he was gonna like just eclipse both, no problem. But that's a challenge, I think, for the Bruins. I think that's not an area where that's great for them because they don't have a shutdown line anymore.
Yeah, and it's even like you look at defensively, like people have talked a lot about like Hampus Lindholm and Charlie McAvoy as your kind of super pairing at the top. That's great and all, but if they're able to slow down Matthews, I mean, fantastic, obviously. His numbers speak for themselves. But as you said, what happens if Nylander's on the third line? Or even, hell, even if it's just Tavares and Nylander together in the second line, who's accounting for that? Are you throwing Brennan Carlo and Grizzlick out there? Like, we know what Carlo's done. And Carlo, I think, has primarily played a lot of his minutes against Matthews. So, yeah. But again, that's with him and Hampus Lindholm, which helps out quite a bit. So you go back to that, you put McAvoy and Grizzlick, you know what to expect from them as the group that kind of handles, you know, the Nylander-Tavares line. Like, it's not easy to kind of map out how, you know, what's the set formula for beating this team. Like, and again, it's Toronto. They're going to get their chances. They're too talented up front to fully negate them. It's all about what your goaltending and defense can do to try to limit that damage. And then obviously down the other end of the ice, how you can capitalize in areas where the Bruins should be favored, right?
And I think it's also, do they move Nylander up with Tavares and Marner? Because I know, you know, yeah, we'll get to Tavares in a second as maybe a guy they can exploit a little bit. But does that help with the speed element? Tavares is a bit slower, has a tough time catching up with fast teams. The Bruins obviously are not a fast team, but you know, in that event, you know, do they go with Nylander and Marner alongside Tavares? So that should be interesting. I want to get to areas that the Bruins can exploit, because that does seem to be a thing where there are a couple topics we have not discussed when it comes to things that might worry us, because these things don't worry us, or at least shouldn't worry the Bruins. But first, a quick word from our friends over at PrizePicks.
Get in on the playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on PrizePicks as you and the world's best players take the game to a whole new level during basketball and hockey's postseason. You can turn $10 into $1,000 with basketball and hockey entries today on PrizePicks, America's number one fantasy sports app. PrizePicks has something for every sports fan, from basketball and hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. You can pick LeBron, Connor McDavid, and Jude Bellingham all in the same entry. PrizePicks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country, including California, Texas, and Georgia. PrizePicks even offers injury insurance so that your entries stay in place even if one of your players gets injured. For basketball games, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and doesn't return in the second, PrizePicks will have you back and not count that as a loss. PrizePicks is really simple to play. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and a huge selection of players and stat types are what make PrizePicks the number one daily fantasy sports app. And with the Bruins season still in full swing, there are plenty of ways to participate in PrizePicks. This week, I'm selecting David Pastrnak for more than 3 goals and Charlie McAvoy for more than 4 assists. So download the PrizePicks app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. Again, use code CLNS for a first deposit match of up to $100. PrizePicks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. And now, let's get back to the show.
So there are some areas the Bruins should have some sort of advantage in the series, and a weird one. I guess this is kind of like the toilet bowl of power plays. Neither team has been good on the power play. The Leafs actually have a worse power play and way worse special teams when you factor in their PK, because their PK is like bottom three. The PK has not been good. But the fact that their power play is bad is interesting to me, because you have so many guys there. Nylander, Riley, Matthews, Marner, you know, so many guys who could pack a punch, and they just haven't. And I find that kind of funny that the Bruins actually have a better power play on paper. So that is one area where, you know, you can maybe win the power play edge. Your PK is pretty good. And you also could limit their power play. You could get your own power play going as well.
Yeah, it's a little bit different from like the Tampa series, where it's like, all right, the Bruins, who have been prone this year to taking some bad penalties, taking some stick infractions, like, you want no smoke of that Tampa Bay power play. That group is absolutely terrifying. But as you said, for all the talent there, it just hasn't really, the results haven't been there for Toronto. I think since March 2nd, they're 13% on the power play. It's like 9 for 68, 69, I think. So they haven't really been able to land some punches there. And the Bruins PK has been improving over the last month or so as well. So you do kind of like that matchup, at least going into it. And then down the other end of the ice, again, we've talked a lot about the Bruins power play. It hasn't really been there so far over the last month or so. Had better looks in that game against Ottawa. Again, a little too late, but a few better chances. But still, like, are you going to drastically augment that group going into this playoff matchup, right? Like, is Kevin Shattenkirk in the lineup? Because, like, again, he looked pretty solid up top there. But so Jim Montgomery and the Bruins have to figure that out. But when you look at, one, the fact that Toronto's power play is kind of sputtering, and the fact that, again, as rough as your group has kind of looked on the man advantage, I think Toronto's 23rd in the NHL in penalty kill this year. So
yes,
there are ways for you to, you know, claw back into games. Like, we mentioned this, I think, on Bruins beat. Like, there's going to be a couple of these games where the Bruins might have to win it 5-4, right? And there's probably going to be a couple of these games where after one intermission, the Bruins are, you know, giving up 2 goals and people are worried about the skies falling. But if you're able to, you know, execute on the power play, the opportunity should be there for this team. So that is definitely one area in terms of special teams where the Bruins should be able to exploit it. Barring, again, it's the playoffs. We've seen multiple teams, even the Bruins last year, kind of slump going into the playoffs, and then they turn it on and look like a completely different unit out there. And when you look at who Toronto has, would not surprise me if they also ramp things up as well.
No, it wouldn't. But I find that interesting that that's one area, because yeah, I think if you didn't know those stats, like, oh, the Leafs have a way better power play. And we'll get into in a sec kind of who could benefit from these exploitations. You know, who are the players who could kind of exploit these? Another area is in net. That was one thing we talked about a lot when it was Tampa versus Toronto, of who you wanted the Bruins to face. Tampa had the edge in net by a lot with Vasilevsky. With Toronto, you have Ilya Samsonov. And all year, you know, he kind of came in as a number one. It didn't really work. They had Joseph Wall, who looked pretty good in the first half, didn't look great in the second half. Martin Jones hasn't played in a while. He's sort of fallen out of favor. Matt Murray's kind of like on the outside. Samsonov, I think, is like 15-4-1 or around that record-wise, you know, since the All-Star break. But he's under a .900 save percentage. So really, the team in front of him has just been that good. And I think with Samsonov, you know, he's obviously had a bad history against the Bruins. This is an area where you know, again, like, it's not like he's had a bad history against the Bruins, but he's been nasty this year. And it's like, okay, this is a different animal. This, you know, I mentioned on Bruins beat, the 5-on-5 scoring has worried me with the Bruins, and the depth, the scoring depth behind that Heinen Zaka Pasternak line has worried me. This could be an area where they could get that scoring going again against a guy like Samsonov.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you look at, again, Vasilevsky in Tampa hasn't had a good year, but you look at the resume and his track record of elevating the playoffs, you can see why I think Bruins fans would be terrified of that matchup. And again, like, it's not going to be walking the puck for Swayman and Omar.
Walking the where?
I know, I'm going to just trudge right through this. I'm going to keep on going, Evan. But you look at, they're going to have a challenge against Toronto's offense, but down the other end of the ice, right, like, Samsonov has, what, a 1-2-2 record against Boston's career, a sub 900 save percentage against Boston. You can make the argument Joseph Wall's been better this year for Toronto, but he lost all three of his games against Boston earlier this regular season as well. You got Matt Murray, who's doing a conditioning stint. Guy has not played since last April and wasn't all that great last year, so I can't see him being all of a sudden they're going to do like the Stone Cold Steve Austin and Matt Murray's going to come out. Save the day. But yeah, I mean, like, again, you look at, we've seen time and time again where teams that maybe have goalies that their numbers don't look all that great. You look at like Carolina, you know, beyond Frederik Andersen, they've rotated in so many other guys that you're like, who the hell is this guy? And all of a sudden they're still able to kind of hold on and win games and outscore the competition. And Toronto has the means to do that. But yeah, you look at what Samsonov has done this year, Wall against the Bruins. There are just areas for the Bruins to exploit, and there are ways for them that, you know, the Bruins have had some tough sledding getting going offensively, but, you know, it's kind of the same flaws with this Toronto team that we've seen in years past. Like, again, they are lethal offensively. They're probably better than they've ever been offensively. They've added more, you know, heft, especially like you look at, everyone talks about Ryan Reeves, but like Joel Edmondson's was a good pickup for them. Like they do have guys that add a little bit of sturdiness in the playoffs. You know, you're not even looking at the underlying numbers, what have you, but still, when you need to make a timely save or two, guys like Samsonov and Wall don't necessarily inspire a lot of confidence, at least going into this series.
Everyone knows come the playoffs, the biggest thing is matchups. That's what wins you series. That's what dominates everything. How do you match the lines? What D pairings go against what forward lines? And one area that the Bruins could exploit, we talk about depth with the Leafs up front, is that Pontus Holmberg line. He's been their third line center. He's been kind of iffy. He hasn't played a ton. You know, they don't use him a ton. That could be a line. And again, they don't know if Yarncroc's going to be back yet. He would be a guy in that third line. They have Nick Robertson down there. But I am curious if that's a line that at the Garden, when that line jumps over the boards, are they immediately throwing that Zaka line out there? Talking about the Bruins. I think that could be another area where maybe you gain a little bit of an edge at 5-on-5.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at just the way that, you know, where Toronto's deficiencies are, and you look at the track record of some of the players on this Bruins team. There's a lot of Bruins who are probably pretty pumped about playing a team like Toronto. You look at, obviously, David Pastrnak's a great player in and of himself, whoever he plays. But Seems to always elevate his game against Toronto, right? I mean, this is a guy that had a 6-point game against them in the playoffs a few years back. Has been close, you know, has really decimated them in the regular season, in the playoffs. And as you said, like, especially on, you know, home ice where they get last change, the Bruins should be able to find ways to really exploit some of the softer areas of Toronto's depth chart with David Pastrnak out there. And again, you get him going, you get another two guys going, and Pavel Zacha and Danton Heinen, that should help out quite a bit. But I also look at a guy like Jake DeBrusk, who you look at has been kind of a tough year for him, right? Hasn't able to find a lot of traction, but always seems to elevate his game against a team like Toronto. He's got 9 points in 14 career playoff games against Toronto in his career. So he's a guy that has stepped up in that regard. Had obviously the 2-goal game in game 7 in 2018 as a rookie. Feels like a long time ago, right? But DeBrusk is a guy that you look at, whether it's rush chances, which again, Toronto can be prone to those, or just, you know, weak net front coverage. He should be a guy that if you're DeBrusk and you're looking for a clean slate, looking for a way to start off this playoff run, what could be your last playoff run with the Bruins on a good note, I think he's a guy that definitely should get up for this matchup. And if he gets rolling, you're feeling pretty good about where your game is at when you look at just where you should be able to kind of attack the weaknesses on this Toronto team.
I agree. And I think part of the reason that Leafs net front coverage hasn't been as good as it should be is because their D pairings have been in flux. I mean, Edmonton's been hurt, and they don't really know what the top pairing is going to be, who's going to be playing alongside Morgan Riley. Is it TJ Brody? It kind of hits back at, like, they don't have a number one shutdown defenseman. This is an area where the Bruins reign supreme. You have McAvoy, you have Carlo. It looks like Brandon Carlo, at least based off history, should be getting most of his reps against Matthews. And then you mentioned it, like, that benefits McAvoy, because if he's with Grizzlick and then suddenly, you know, he's getting favorable matchups and maybe playing a little bit more in the O-zone, you're getting more production from him potentially. And he's, you know, dominating his matchup. But another interesting thing is that Tavares line for them, that's typically been their shutdown line. Matthews has played. I mean, Matthews is a great 200-foot center. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, lately his line mates have been Bertuzzi and Max Domi. And that's not a super defensive line. Bruins fans remember well Tyler Bertuzzi's defensive inefficiencies last year, despite leading the Bruins in playoff points. But I just wonder if the Tavares line, if that's going to be their shutdown line and in Toronto, and John Tavares is going up against, you know, let's say Pavel Zacha's line, is that line going to be enough to stop that Zacha line in Toronto? I wonder if that's the case.
I mean, if you're Toronto, you probably, even if you're able to grind them down to, you know, not just being a line that can, combine for a goal or two there, you'll take it, right? Because then it's just the onus falls on and the pressure ramps up for the rest of the Bruins forward core to land punches there. And again, you've got Coyle, who's, I think, historically elevated his game in the playoffs. You got Marchand, you got DeBrusk, who likes playing the Leafs. And then that third line, whatever the combination is for Boston, is going to be crucial, right? Like, you got Frederick, who I think there's a lot of pressure on him to have a really strong playoff after really not making much of a dent these last two first round exits against Carolina and Florida. You got Geeky, who's obviously been a great addition as well this year. Then whoever it is, right? Is it Pat Maroon on that third line? Is it JVR who's trying to find his game? And I think he had a bit of a better game against Ottawa in that last game, but he's someone that if he's able to regain some of what he provided from October through December, you'll absolutely take that if you're the Bruins. So again, like, I think it's fair to assume David Pastrnak is going to get his chances, the same as Austin Matthews get his chances. But you're going to need more of your secondary scoring to kind of pull on the rope there, because there's going to be a couple of these games, regardless if you feel like the Bruins are favored and they're going to win in 5-6 games, whatever. Like, there's going to be a couple of these games where they're going to have to claw back from early deficits, I think.
And I think it's also going to be that you mentioned the secondary scoring. I think that's huge in every playoff series, and that, you know, sometimes the top lines cancel out or things like that. And it comes to the onus falls on your third liners, your fourth liners to step up and pot one every now and again. We see it with the Corrali line back in the day, like them, even when they had tough matchups, finding ways to go down the other end of the ice and get chances. So the Bruins will need to do that for sure. One interesting guy is Shattenkirk. We mentioned he was running the power play on Tuesday night against the Senators when they finally got a power play, and they scored on a power play. And I wonder if that helps him get in the lineup. We talked a lot since the deadline when they added Andrew Peak, and we've talked a lot this year with the inclusion of Mason Lowry, that, you know, you sort of go back and forth on who's going to be that third pairing, who's going to get in the lineup. Do they go bigger? You know, do they go with kind of a Wotherspoon Peak? Do they put a puck mover in there like Shattenkirk? Does Lowry see some time? He has size, but not necessarily the kind of the physicality that a 6'5" defenseman or a veteran 6'5" defenseman might have. But could we see Shattenkirk a fair amount in this series, kind of getting the power play going?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely could be in the mix. And again, like if this Bruins team goes on a run, like I think we're going to expect to see a lot of guys pulling the rope, and the Bruins can kind of change their defense for, you know, depending on what the matchup is. Like, you know, like if it's Wotherspoon's the odd man out, wouldn't be surprised if he draws into, you know, another game or another series where the Bruins go far. But I think you look at what Shattenkirk can provide. He gave you a little bit of a different look on that power play, which again, if you're the Bruins and you identify the special teams as an area you can exploit and build some of a cushion there, then I think that can go a long way. So I do think that's something that can definitely play into it in terms of what he can provide. He's another right shot. Like, I think you do like what a guy like Lindholm could provide up there as a left shot, and how we can kind of hit Pastrnak, especially with some of those feeds. But I don't know. I just think that like Lindholm is where he's going to be so busy defending, you know, guys like Matthews or Tavares, or go down the list, Marner, Nylander. I think they're going to reserve most of his minutes for those kind of taxing D-zone reps.
I agree. And I think that's why we said this on the power play the whole time. Like McAvoy, same type of thing, right? Like you have so much going on in defending and 5-on-5 that, you know, he's not an amazing power play quarterback to begin with. Don't just keep adding that onto his plate. But again, he's your top paid defenseman. You know, sometimes yeah, that comes with the territory. We'll talk a lot more about this Bruins-Leafs series as the week goes on. I know you'll have a lot at Boston.com and the Boston Globe. One story that broke on Tuesday night, this was after we recorded Bruins Beat, Jack Edwards announced his retirement. You know, it's big news. It's huge news. I think it's time. That's my first thing. I mean, it's been really tough to watch Jack struggle these last couple years with this speech issue that he has. And I think it's, you know, it's time, but it's also really sad. And he's a legend. He's an icon. I mean, there aren't any other Jack Edwardses. Like, he's one of one. And I think that Bruins fans should feel fortunate to have listened to him for so many years. I mean, his voice is synonymous with so many incredible moments through the last 15 or 19 years. Like kind of your reaction to his retirement.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he said it right, Evan. Like, he's an icon. You know, he's a guy that has, you know, there's probably, I think Brad Marchand said it after the game on Tuesday, Bruins fans love him, opposing fans probably don't. But I think you look at what he's provided over 19 years calling Bruins games, I think it's kind of, it's pretty easy, or it's easy to spot, you know, fake sincerity or you know, manufactured passion in that kind of profession, right? You can tell when someone's mailing it in or aren't sincere with, you know, how invested they are in the team, the fan base, all those kinds of things. And I think, you know, that's nothing that resonates with Jack Edwards, right? He's always been a guy that's very passionate about hockey. I think as a New Englander, is well aware of the role and responsibility that he had, and, you know, has kind of stamped his identity over some of the best wins this franchise has had over the last 20 years, right? Like, there's been so many great moments on the ice that have been punctuated by a Jack Edwards call that I think everyone has their favorite call, their favorite moment. There was a stream on Twitter and social media of just different calls that people have brought up over the years that have all been kind of synonymous, that everyone knows. Everyone knows the greatest hits when it's Jack calling games. So yeah, unfortunate it kind of ends like this. You wish Jack, you know, well in retirement. But as you said, an icon, and what a legacy to lead. Like, again, very curious to see who the Bruins replace him with, but whoever it is not going to be as unique as, you know, what a vintage Jack Edwards broadcast was, right?
Well, that's the thing. And I think that's, you know, when you talk about replacements, I think everybody, you know, the realistic option is Alex Faust, you know, Northeastern grad, former voice of the Kings, young guy, good broadcaster, Same with, could you go out and get Dave Gosher from Vegas? Like, that's obvious. I think that's everyone's choice. You know, Sean McDonough from ESPN. I mean, local guy. It makes a lot of money, though. I don't know if that would work.
John Forslund's got an opt-out, I think, with the Kraken.
Did you see him prior to a Kraken broadcast? Eddie Olczyk was like, oh, don't leave. And he's like, I'm not leaving, like, for now. And it was like, all right, let's get on with things. Mike Monaco, is there something there? So, like, but at the same time, as great as all those guys are, and I think, would be happy with any of them, no one carries that emotion like Jack. Like, Jack was really like if you put a fan in the broadcast booth. Mm-hmm. And like, what's interesting to me is, and I said this to you when that story was written about his health problem. A lot of times opposing broadcasters, when the other team scores, like, oh, he scores, and they're all like depressed. Jack was into it. Like, it was almost like he was riding with the waves of the game. And it was like, I loved that. And I also think it hits it like, and some people might have different philosophies for what they want for a local play-by-play guy. I want someone who's emotional, and I want someone who just has great moments in game 45 of the season when the Bruins are like in Arizona or something. Like, all those like classic Jack Edwards calls. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, there's like, the Bergeron with the point of the dagger and all that stuff. Like, there's those. But then there's like the thing on Matt Cook comparing him to Sirhan. And then, there's like Brave Steve. And there's things like that where it's like, I want those moments. And I think there's a lot of local play-by-play guys who are very professional and very good at what they do. But they don't open themselves up to do that stuff. And I just think that's why Jack's one of one.
Yeah. And even like, as you said, like it's. That shows, I think, it's just how passionate he is about the sport. Like, if you watch that broadcast for that 2013 Bruins Leafs game, everyone obviously looks at the tying goal from Bergeron, the overtime winning goal from Bergeron. But like that third period, when I think, what was it, Kessel and Kadri, I think, were the ones that scored to put them ahead. Like, dude was calling it like he was a national broadcaster, just like talking about the significance of like Toronto going into another building in Boston, especially and capitalizing. Kind of just captures the tone of what was an exciting, ends up being a legendary playoff hockey game. And again, that's testament to, I think, how passionate he's about just the sport in general, but also how he views the job. Like, he's going to add his own flavor, his own emotion to these broadcasts. And I think a lot of times these games are a whole lot better for it.
And the wildest part was the thing, he came on Bruins Beat a few years ago and explained that his lines that he looks at, he has like this, like these monitors, and they were built by him and his son. And like, it's all up, his son like helps update the data. His son is young. Like, I think his son might be a teenager, but at the time he was younger. It was fascinating stuff. You see it in some of the pictures of the broadcast booth. The Bruins got some good ones on Tuesday night. But again, I mean, just the passion, the emotion, just how good he was. And I know there were some who were like, oh, he's exhausting and this and that. There were times that he'd throw his opinion in things, but it made it interesting. It was interesting. And whether you disagreed with it or not, it was like, there's life in this broadcast, which I think you watch so many games around the league and there isn't.
It was always appointment viewing when it was the Bruins matched up against Erik Karlsson, whether it's in San Jose or Ottawa, would be like 5 minutes not calling the play, just talking about Erik Karlsson, who, again, you forget. Well, I mean, I don't think people forget. Maybe Jack forgets, but Erik Karlsson, that 2017 playoff, was a monster. He's still not that good. He's doing like end-to-end passes. The guy's hitting sauce everyone passes directly. He's hitting everyone on the tape with sauce right. Like, he's pretty good, Jack.
That was great. But that's the thing. Like, whatever we get next, hopefully they pick someone good. I hope it's not just, like some old professional broadcaster. And then I don't want that. you know what I'm talking about? Like the voice.
Yes, of course.
They're like carbon copies.
A classically trained broadcaster.
Yes. The professional broadcaster. Like, I don't want that. I don't. Something I think you should leave. I don't want that.
Yes.
I got stuck in the Charlie Brown, the peanuts at the peanuts parade. So I have all my money.
Yes. It's sewn into the pants.
There's like five people who get that reference.
That's fine. But I finally get that one. It's not a streaming joke. So I'm back. Exactly. I'm back, baby.
Exactly. You're back. You're back in it. You feel young again. But again, I wish Jack the best. He's a legend, an icon. I loved him holding the golden stick like it was the cup the other night. Yes. And then I'd never seen, I don't know if you saw, the Bruins tweeted out a video of like kind of a, or the Nesson did like a montage Sofia Yurkshevich talked over, and I'd never seen him hoisting the cup, and he's in the locker room just dumping champagne.
He was getting after it. He was amped. I mean, listen, no, there's no one who could be composed lifting the Stanley Cup when you got champagne dropping on you. Like,
no, especially him.
Yes, but yes, very, very, very cool sight. Yeah, as one would expect, Jack was extremely amped to be in that moment.
Yes, as he should be. So good for him. All the best to him and his family. I look forward to watching some of the broadcasts in the playoffs. Those will be his last. And that's this episode of Poke the Bear. Connor, what can the people look forward to from you at the Globe and Boston.com?
Yeah, we're going to have you covered throughout this cup run, however far it goes, with, you know, recaps, features, breakdowns. We're already diving into a few series previews now, looking at some really intriguing matchups, some that we've already talked about. So you can find all that stuff over at Boston.com and the Globe. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at @ConnorRyan_93.
Go do all that. That's Connor Ryan. I'm Evan Marinofsky. Poke the Bear listeners, have a great rest of your week.